जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी। जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी। यशोद नंदना ब्रज जन रंजना। यशोद नंदना ब्रज जन रंजना। जमुना तीरावन चारी। जमुना तीरावन चारी। जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी। जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी। यशोद नंदना ब्रज जन रंजना। यशोद नंदना ब्रज जन रंजना। जमुना तीरावन चारी। जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी। जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी। यशोद नंदना ब्रज जन रंजना। यशोद नंदना ब्रज जन रंजना। जमुना तीरावन चारी। जमुना तीरावन चारी।
Jayam Vishnupad Paramahansa Parivrajakacharya Astutarasata Shri Shimad His Divine Grace Abhay Charanaravinda Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Jayam Vishnupad Paramahansa Parivrajakacharya Astutarasata Shri Shimad His Divine Grace Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Prabhupada Ki Jai Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai Prem Sekaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopinath Shyama Kund Radha Kund Giri Govardhana Ki Jai Shri Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai Shri Mayapur Dham Ki Jai Shri New Raman Reti Dham Ki Jai Gangamai Jamunamai Ki Jai Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Tulasi Devi Ki Jai Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories Shri Guru and Shri Gauranga. Jai Srila Prabhupada. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale. Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine. Namaste Sarasate Deve Gauravani Pracharine. Nirvishesha Shunyavari Paschatyade Shatarine. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya So today we'll take a verse from the Bhagavad Gita as it is by with translations and purports by Srila Prabhupada and today we've chosen Bhagavad Gita chapter 10 verse 10 which is one of the four prominent and most important shlokas in the Bhagavad Gita. It's called the Chatur Shloki, so this is one of them. And so the Sanskrit goes as follows. Tesham satata yuktanam bhajam satata yuktanam bhajatang pritipurvakam tadami buddhiyogang tam Yenamam upayantite. Translation. To those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. Purport. In this verse, the word buddhi yogam is very significant. We may remember that in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord instructing Arjuna said that he had spoken to him of many things and that he would instruct him in the way of Buddhi Yoga. Now, Buddhi Yoga is explained. Buddhi Yoga itself is action in Krishna consciousness. That is the highest intelligence. Buddhi means intelligence, and yoga means mystic activities or mystic elevation. When one tries to go back home, back to Godhead, and takes fully to Krishna consciousness in devotional service, his action is called buddhi yoga. In other words, buddhi yoga is the process by which one gets out of the entanglement of this material world. The ultimate goal of progress is Krishna. People do not know this, therefore, the association of devotees and a bona fide spiritual master are important. One should know that the goal is Krishna, and when the goal is assigned, then the path is slowly but progressively traversed, and the ultimate goal is achieved. When a person knows the goal of life, but is addicted to the fruits of activities, he is acting in karma yoga. When he knows that the goal is Krishna, but he takes pleasure in mental speculations to understand Krishna, he is acting in jnana yoga. And when he knows the goal and seeks Krishna completely in Krishna consciousness and devotional service, he is acting in bhakti yoga or buddhi yoga, which is the complete yoga. This complete yoga is the highest perfectional stage of life. A person may have a bona fide spiritual master and may be attached to a spiritual organization, but if he is still not intelligent enough to make progress, then Krishna from within gives him instructions so that he may ultimately come to him without difficulty. The qualification is that a person always engage himself in Krishna consciousness and with love and devotion render all kinds of services. He should perform some sort of work for Krishna, and that work should be for love. If a devotee is not intelligent enough to make progress on the path of self-realization, but is sincere and devoted to the activities of devotional service, the Lord gives him a chance to make progress and ultimately attain to him. Om Jnana Timiranhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So there are two main concepts in this verse. The first is Priti Purvakam. Priti Purvakam is translated to be in loving ecstasy. And the second is Satat Yuktanam, always to be engaged, constantly to be engaged. And this constant engagement will not be possible without this loving ecstasy. Srila Prabhupada explains in other places that the basic principle of the living condition is that we have a general propensity to love someone. That is a given. That is part of the desire, the makeup of being alive, of being a spirit soul, that element of love. The missing point, Srila Prabhupada explains, though, in this material world, the missing point is where to repose that love so that everyone can become happy. We all know the expression, it's a famous quote, looking for love in all the wrong places. That is the condition of this material world. So, if we look at the scope of a human life, the time that we are allotted for this material body, we see so many changes. We see after birth, then love begins with the family. Well, first actually begins the love of self. You know, one has this feeling that one is the center of the universe. One has this feeling that one's needs and desires are of the utmost importance. And this self-love is the initial driving force of the struggle for survival, you might say. Beyond that, gradually this expands into the love of family, from there into the love of friends, and from there maybe into the love of society, and so on. So materially, so even materially speaking, we see that the highest person that we give honor to in this world is someone who has love for all, love for everyone. And such people, they receive Nobel Prizes for peace and their philanthropy and so on. So this is the material. However, we see that in this material world, sometimes family members become enemies. Brotherly love turns into fraternal rivalry. Friends fall out. And society goes to hell. So this is the unfortunate reality of the world. And one can see it that ultimately this kind of love can never be fully satisfying because there are so many impediments to material love, to material this material propensity that we have due to our situation in material bodies subject to the modes of material nature. Modes of material nature, that is a whole other topic. But we see also, I was just beginning to reread the Srimad Bhagavatam, I recommend it for all devotees, no matter how long you've been around, that start over again at Canto 1, Chapter 1, and start going through the Srimad Bhagavatam one more time. It's very rewarding. You learn a lot of things that you forgot along the way over all these years. And so Canto 1, in Chapter 11, there's a chapter. The chapter is entitled Krishna Enters Dwarka. And so it's a wonderful scene of Krishna entering Dwarka, meeting his family and meeting his relatives and the citizens of his capital city of Dwarka after a long time, after the Battle of Kurukshetra, after many events. And it's described there that the inhabitants of Dwarka were regularly accustomed to look upon the reservoir of all beauty, the infallible Lord, and yet they were never satiated. This principle of satiation is very prominent in the material world. It doesn't matter what type of pleasure one attempts to achieve in this material world, he will ultimately, if he gets enough of it, become satiated, and he will be no longer interested in it. And so, anything material, after a point, becomes ultimately unattractive. And Srila Prabhupada calls this the law of satiation. And this verse of Krishna, these verses of Krishna entering Dwarka, they prove that there is no scope for satiation in the spiritual realm. So, once one has a spiritual identity in the spiritual world, he's no longer under the material laws of transformation, of deterioration, and ultimately annihilation. So, the difference between Krishna's descent to this material world, he does not really descend to this material world. He brings his entire paraphernalia, his entire spiritual realm with him when he comes to the material world. And his body is the source of everything. It is the reservoir of all beauties that are even beyond our experience. And no one, therefore, is satiated by seeing the transcendental body of the Lord, because there are always manifestations of newer and newer beauties in Krishna. And that is not to be found in this material world. These newer and newer beauties, opulences, and these are awe-inspiring when we read these descriptions in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So in the next verse, in verse 26 of this chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, it describes that the Lord's chest is the abode of the goddess of fortune. So the goddess of fortune is someone whose favors everyone is searching for in this material world. They're asking the goddess of fortune, please make me rich. Please make me beautiful. Please give me knowledge. Please let me pass my examinations. It's an endless desire, endless number of desires that we have. And so this is described. And to them, the Lord, the Vedic literatures give information that the Lord is always served in the spiritual world in the place called Chintamani Dham. So there is this beautiful verse from the Brahma Samhita, Chintamani Prakara Sadmasu Kalpa Vriksha Lakshavriteshu Surabir Abhipalayantam Lakshmi Sahasra Shatasambrama Sevyamanam Govinda Madi Purusham Tamaham Vajami. that the transcendental abode of the Lord is where all the trees are desire trees, the buildings are made of touchstone, the Lord is always engaged in herding the Surabhi cows as his natural occupation, and Lakshmi Sahasra, thousands upon thousands of goddesses of fortune, can be seen automatically if we are attracted to this beautiful vision of Krishna in the spiritual world. And so later on in this, in the chapter of Krishna entering Dwarka, it's described the reactions that the queens of Dwarka, Krishna's wives, this description is given, that although their beautiful smiles and their furtive glances were spotless and exciting, and although they could conquer Cupid himself by making him give up his bow in frustration, and although even the tolerant Lord Shiva could fall victim to their charms, despite all their magical feats and attractions, they could not agitate the senses of the Lord, that Krishna was not in any way disturbed by their charms, because it is described that Krishna is Atmarama. He is full and complete in himself. He does not require any other stimulation for his happiness and enjoyment. Everything is full and complete in his Atmarama state. And so So the queens of Dwarka could not satisfy the Lord by their feminine attractiveness. So how was it that Krishna was so attracted to them, that they had, that they were able to, and this is to snag Krishna as their husband? How was it possible if he was not attracted by their feminine beauty and charms? And it's described that only by unalloyed, transcendental, loving service could they satisfy the Lord. And the Lord was pleased to treat them as wives in reciprocation. Actually, we can see, in a way, a distorted reflection in this material world. When people say that a beauty is only skin deep, the real beauty of a person is within. The real beauty that a person has is due to their inner happiness, their inner peace, their inner loving mood towards the outside world. So similarly, in the spiritual world, that inner peace, that inner loving propensity is directed towards Krishna. And this is the way in which the queens of Dwarka actually gain Krishna's attraction. So this is a beautiful, these points of, are what is illustrated in this verse by the term satata yuktanam, constant engagement, combined with priti purvakam, loving ecstasy. So we're indebted to Srila Prabhupada for these kinds of descriptions of how the spiritual world works. We can read in the Bhagavad Gita very nicely how the material world works according to the modes of nature and according to the propensities, material propensities of the living entities. But here, further on, also in the Bhagavad Gita, we also see how the spiritual world operates. And so the next point in this particular verse is the question of having a bona fide spiritual master and belonging to a spiritual organization. So we see there are many spiritual organizations in the world, whether they are sincere or bogus or whatever. Some are not really, some are pretend spiritual. But at the same point, I always remember personal experience that very devout and very sincere Christians would approach me to become saved. And, of course, as a devotee, I felt that I was already saved. And so sometimes, because I knew that the Christian faith generally has a lack of philosophical content, shall we say, I would joke with them, and I would say to them, you know, there are two kinds of people in the world. The people who know and the people who don't know. And for the people who know, no explanations are necessary. And for the people who don't know, no explanations are possible. Actually, sometimes it would infuriate them because they had no answer for this, you know, conundrum, you might say. It was humorous to some degree. And it's correct in one sense, but wrong in another sense. It's correct in the sense that the living entities have come to the material world in order to enjoy their senses and turn away from God. For such persons who are fixed in that path, no explanations really are possible. I think she got upset by the conundrum, maybe. Anyway, where they turn away from God and pursue their sense gratification, they have no desire to actually hear the message of Krishna consciousness. So in one sense, for them, no explanations are possible. But this overlooks one thing, and this overlooks the desire of the devotee who wishes to save the conditioned souls. And that desire ultimately will override that impossibility of explanation for those who are who have no faith in the process. So we often mention that it is the purity of Srila Prabhupada's desire to deliver the conditioned souls that is our only qualification for approaching Krishna and becoming Krishna conscious. And so especially in the Iron Age of Kali Yuga, we know that it's a very irreligious time. And so there is a book that was published by the BBT called Civilization and Transcendence. And this book was a series of a questionnaire, and there's a spiritual magazine in India called Bhavan's Journal. And so Bhavan's Journal, they sent out this, they published this questionnaire that they wanted the leaders of spiritual movements to answer this questionnaire. And so the very, very first question that Bhavan's Journal addressed was, is the influence of religion over the masses on the wane? See, that is religion, the influence of religion deteriorating in this, in the present time. And Srila Prabhupada, he regarded these kinds of questionnaires and philosophical debates, he regarded them as a great challenge. And so he spent, you know, Srila Prabhupada was a busy man. He had many things going on, and yet for these kinds of things, he was very sincere and very earnest in trying to answer the questions of this kind of question. And so when he heard this question, immediately he quoted from the Srimad Bhagavatam. There's a verse from the 12th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. I did have it down. Tatash chanudinam dharma satyam shocham chamadaya kalena balina rajan nankshyatyayur balang smriti. And the translation is, in this age of Kali, the age of quarrel and hypocrisy, there shall be a waning of these qualities, religiosity, truthfulness, cleanliness, tolerance, memory, bodily strength, duration of life, and mercy. So generally, most so-called religious leaders, Prabhupada followed this up, that most so-called religious leaders have no conception of God, and yet they are preaching religion. This is a very serious allegation that Prabhupada is making. And then he says, what good is that religion if the leaders have no concept of God? People are simply being misled. Real religion is the order of God. Dharmam tu sakshad bhagavat pranitam. That religion is the laws, the instructions, the orders, and the enlightenment given by God. That is what religion truly means. And if your religion has no conception of God, where is the question of religion? So how long, Srila Prabhupada asks, how long will it go on artificially? This is an artificial, how long will these artificial constructs of religion, how long can they survive? They will deteriorate, and this ignorance about God has resulted in the present condition of society. That is the answer to that question. So Srila Prabhupada also took a lot of time to answer the theories of Western philosophers. And there's a series of conversations that Srila Prabhupada had for days on end where a devotee would present a particular philosopher, his thought, his understanding, and Srila Prabhupada would answer that according to the Vedic version. And Srila Prabhupada was so intent on this that after the one session where he'd been through about 30 different philosophers in this way, they came to Srila Prabhupada and they said, unfortunately, the questions were not so good. The devotees didn't understand these philosophies so well, so that they didn't ask really the right questions. Can we ask you again? And Srila Prabhupada agreed. And so another series of conversations took place with about these 20 or 30 different philosophers. And there were some interesting things come out of that, and Prabhupada found it very important. And he also found a lot of agreement with some of the ideas presented by these philosophers. Because, after all, you know, logic and reason are required both by material philosophers and by spiritual philosophers and by Krishna consciousness itself. We do not simply accept them, these things, as fairy stories. We accept that there is a very truth and a very profound philosophy behind Krishna consciousness. So, just to give an example, there was a philosopher, Leibniz, Gottfried Wilhelm Leibniz. He was a very intelligent person. He was a mathematician. His claim to distinction as a mathematician was that he invented calculus. And he was also a philosopher. So he's a very intelligent person. And he came to the conclusion that in this universe, every act is purposeful, and that the purpose of the universe is to realize the goals set forth by God. And this, Srila Prabhupada found very agreeable. This is the true situation of things. And so there's a very nice book, another book by the BBT. It's called, if I should plug, because after all, I am their servant. And so it's The Quest for Enlightenment. And The Quest for Enlightenment, very nice book, because it goes in a very nice, systematic, orderly way, explaining what is enlightenment and how to get it, and the different struggles people have had with this concept of enlightenment. And there are, in this book, two the great founders of modern psychology are dealt with in this book. One was Freud, and the other was Jung. They're the two considered the fathers of modern psychological understanding. And Freud, of course, was extremely materialistic and atheistic, and he regarded everything in this material world could be based to the struggle for survival, which actually was based on sexual activity. That sexual activity was the all-in-all in people's consciousness in the material world. And this, in one sense, in a material sense, is not wrong. But Jung had a different idea, because he was a very religious man, and he could not accept the fact, he could not accept the idea that everything was simply material, that there was a metaphysical side, a side of life beyond merely the physical, that ultimately was spiritual. And so Jung, he examined and he lamented the fact that in the modern world, philosophy is no longer a way of life. He looked at previous societies, whether you looked at the Romans or the Greeks, and in India especially, in these ancient societies, the philosophy of that culture determines the way of life of the people. It determines how they worship, it determines how they eat, how they view the world. And so Jung saw that an exclusively intellectual philosophy, that these denominational religions, he called them, they had archaic rites and conceptions that express a view of the world, that this view of the world didn't cause any problems in the Middle Ages, where you didn't have modern science to contend with. But these rites have become strange and unintelligible in the modern world. And this we see very much. And this is arising because most preachers of religion are simply dogmatic. They have no clear idea of God. They simply make official proclamations. This was the conclusion of Mr. Jung. And our answer to Mr. Jung is that Krishna consciousness is clear in every respect. We have a philosophy. We have a way of life that follows that philosophy. And as Srila Prabhupada says, every sane man should cooperate with this Krishna consciousness movement and liberate human society from the gross darkness of ignorance. And as the purport confirms, this purport, a bona fide spiritual master is very merciful. And Lord Chaitanya confirms this. Lord Chaitanya says, the wonderful quote, Sadhu Sangha, Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Shastra Kai, Lava Matra Sadhu Sanghe Sarva Siddhi Hai. The verdict of all religious scriptures is that even a moment's association with a pure devotee, one can attain spiritual success. And this association, Srila Prabhupada explains, that the Krishna consciousness movement is meant to distribute knowledge and to give the knowledge as it's revealed in the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is our philosophy, this is our understanding, and we're getting short on time. I had a whole section devoted to the next phase, which was utopianism, how there are so many utopias in this world. People are imagining that this material world can become a marvelous, a wonderful place to live in. And so they invent these utopias. There are economic utopias. The capitalists argue for one kind of economic utopia. Communists argue for a different kind of economic utopia. There are political utopias. This idea has been going on for a long time. I mean, H.G. Wells, back in the 1800s, wrote a book called A Modern Utopia. And in American history, we have the Puritans in Massachusetts. They set up their utopia. And the Mormons have set up their version of utopia in Utah and so on. So we all have this vision of utopia, but this material world is not meant for this. So Prabhupada labels this kind of thinking as mental concoction. And his spiritual master, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, he called it Akash Pushpa. Akash means mental, ethereal. And Pushpa means flower. The flowers in the heavens. These are the utopias that are promised. And even, I remember as a child, there are children's utopias also. I always remember the song from my childhood, The Big Rock Candy Mountain. And this is the idea that we can have the spiritual world right here on earth. So, are there any questions that anyone has? Yes, there's one.
Hare Krishna. Prabhu, Hare Krishna.
Can you wait for the mic?
Wait for the mic. And when you get the mic, please hold it on the chin and not on the knee.
Otherwise, it's very difficult for others to hear.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu.
You stated that Srila Prabhupada was questioned secondly.
Yes, because he was questioned a second time about these philosophers.
Exactly. So you were referring to dialectic spiritualism.
I beg your pardon?
You were referring to dialectic spiritualism.
Dialectic spiritualism is an account of those conversations. There's a more complete account in the collected lectures, collected teachings of Srila Prabhupada, which was published by Bhaktivedanta Archives, where we've actually published them in full without any editing. Yeah.
You answer my question.
Jai, thank you, Prabhu. So, are there any other questions? I thank you very much for your attention. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.